I want to speak into marriages, but you've got to trust that God has something for every single person, whether you're married, whether you're single, whether you're young, and whether you're old. And I just have to follow this prompting that there's so much attack upon our marriages today that I want to help undergird our marriages, our families. And if you're planning on getting married in the future, then you need to listen. If you have vowed to never be married, listen. I hope I can change your mind. Starla and I, we will have been married 41 years next month. 41 years. We met in college. We married when we were 21 and 19. So we met and were married within a year. We were married and had our first child within a year. 4 kids later, 10 grandchildren later, 2 church plants later, 3 books later, and marriage ministry where we've hit most of this country and had seen a lot of ups and downs, a lot of storms, 30 plus years of lead pastor experience. And I can tell you today, we're happier today than we've ever been. And I believe marriage can get better and better and better. And it should get better. That's why I want to call this Better Marriage. How have you made it? Standing on the word. Just standing on the word. In fact, Starla was going to have her annual mammogram here recently. Was a little anxious, apprehensive, and I told her, like I always do, I said, hey, baby, find a scripture. Stand on the word. Scripture always helps me. I'm sure it'll help you. She went, found a scripture, came back, said, I found it. I said, what's that? She says, 2 Corinthians 4:8. We're hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Not crushed. I said, that'll work. That'll work. Just stand on that. Hey, I want to talk to you about the mystery of marriage. What's the mystery? The mystery is that you love someone so much that you be willing to die for them, but sometimes they drive you so crazy, you just don't know exactly what to do with them. That's probably the case with every single one of us at some time or another. I came in to the bedroom dressed, ready to go the other day. Starla looked at me and said, you wearing that? Well, yeah, we're leaving in like 5 minutes, so I wasn't planning on changing. What's wrong? She said, we clash. We clash. Can you go change into something black or, you know, navy? Babe, we're just going to Walmart. It's okay, I'm pretty sure. But color coordination matters, so we go change. The fact is, couples struggle, and half of the couples that are married don't make it. That doesn't have to be our story. You can start over if you've had a tough, you know, first go around, and God can make things better moving forward. We know marriage is hard, and that's why I want to talk about the mystery of marriage. Not in the Murder, She Wrote sense, but mystery as in what the Bible means when it uses the word mystery. It means something that has been hidden is now revealed. And God has revealed some great keys for a better, a stronger marriage. And so everybody pay attention. Ephesians 5, verse number 30 says this, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife. The two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery. This is the mystery I want to talk about. But I'm talking about Christ and the church. So 3 things I want to say. First of all, that marriage is a mystery because we all are fundamentally flawed. Every single one of us. We're imperfect. We don't have it all together, any one of us. We're all working towards that. And here's the challenge. You take 2 sinners, you put them in the same room, and you expect perfect harmony. Put them in the same home, you expect perfect harmony. How can you have perfect harmony when one believes the toilet lid should be up and the other believes the toilet lid should be down? How can you have perfect harmony when one believes the toilet paper should go over and the other believes it should come under? Everybody knows it's supposed to go over. Can I get an amen? There are lots of differences between men and women. Men have about 6 items in the bathroom. It's a toothbrush, toothpaste, razor, shampoo, soap, and towel. A woman, the average woman, has about 337 items in the bathroom, and a man couldn't identify more than 20 of them. Differences between a man and a woman. Woman always gets the last word in the argument. Anything the man says after that is the beginning of a brand new argument. Most women worry about their future until they get a husband. Most men don't worry about their future until they get a wife. We're just all different like that. A woman, she'll dress up to go shopping, check the mail, water the plants, read a book. Guys, they dress up for weddings and funerals, maybe. That's about it. A woman, she knows everything about her children. She knows their birthdays, their dentist appointments, their romances, their secret hopes and fears and dreams. She knows all those things. A guy, he's vaguely aware that some little short people actually live in the house. Differences between men and women. We're all different, and we're fundamentally flawed. There was a couple that was on the verge of divorce. They go in to see the counselor, and the counselor says, okay, tell me what brings you here today. They said, well, here, I'll give you a perfect example of what brings us here today. We're sitting out on the deck of the house in the backyard, beautiful Saturday afternoon. A fly lands on the deck chair right next to me. He said, I got a newspaper. I rolled it up. I was sneaking up behind it, and I was going to pop that fly. And you know what she did? She shooed it away. She's always messing up everything that I'm trying to do. She's always destroying everything I'm trying to build. She never follows my lead. And the counselor just kind of looked at him and said, okay, are you sure that's the way this went down? Because I plan on telling this story hundreds of times, and I want to make sure I got all the facts right. You're divorcing over a fly. Is that right? Doesn't that bug you? No, I'm kidding. He didn't say that. I'm sure he didn't say that. The fact is, God takes two people, makes them one flesh, and that challenge is a little harder than it seems. And one of the things that I think most couples underestimate is just how different we really are. When you're dating, different is cute, and it's fun, and it's interesting. And we say things like opposites attract. But then when you get married, it's like more like opposites attack. Now, look what Genesis 2:24 says. And Paul quoted this portion that we just read. It said, this is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. When two people get married, God takes them and makes them one flesh. Now, oftentimes we think of one flesh and we think it's kind of, well, that's just we're a conglomerate of two people now. Like if you were Brad and Angelina, now you're Brangelina. If you were Ben and Jennifer, now you're Benifer. Oh, wait, none of them are married anymore. Becoming one flesh doesn't mean that you lose interest in who you are or the things that you like. That's not what that means, but it means that there's a shift in your primary identity. First, leaving father and mother, being united to your wife. In this culture, that was a big deal. In the Jewish culture, your family was everything. In fact, the reason the Bible notes genealogies so often, you see the genealogies because family mattered, history mattered, your ancestry mattered. And so for two people to become one flesh, what that means is there needs to be a shift from the connection to the family to the connection with your spouse. It means your primary identity now is with your spouse. I'm not saying you do away with family, you never talk to family, you disown. No, we're not talking about any of that. But your primary identity now becomes with your spouse, not with your family. That's why you leave father and mother and you're not united to your spouse. But it's not like oil and water in a jar. Those are two entities that do not mix. They will continue to be separate entities in the jar. That's not what one flesh is talking about, because marriage should change you. It's talking about something entirely new. One flesh is something entirely new. Two people becoming one, because marriage changes you, changes each and every one of us. I'm not the same man that Starla married 41 years ago. She's not the same woman, and that's a good thing. In fact, most researchers will tell you that most individuals, most adults, will go through about 5 to 7 changes in their life. So here, listen, you don't need to divorce and marry somebody else to get somebody new. Stay married and you'll have a new person about every 5, 6, 7 years. And our culture says if you get married, you should stay separate. Separate bank accounts, separate goals, separate ambitions. That's oil and water thinking. And oil and water relationships don't last. One flesh, That's the opposite of the oil and water thinking. So the mystery of marriage is really that your spouse has the ability to reprogram your self-image more than anyone else, and that's what creates oneness. See, here, when you're a kid, your parents have the strongest voice in your life. But when you get married, your spouse has the strongest voice in your life. And that's why we should use our voice, our words, to build one another up. Proverbs 18:21 says, the tongue has the power of life and death. Use it to build up, not tear down. You can use it like an atomic bomb if you want, but it's only going to destroy things. Use it to build up. Here's the second point I want to make. Marriage is a mystery because the essence of marriage is the vow. Unmarried ladies, the essence of marriage is the vow, not the venue. It's the vow. I know some will die. I got to get married at that venue. It's that venue. It's that dress. It's those flowers. It's this cake. It's that or nothing. No, it's the vow, not the venue. One of my very first weddings, when I was still a youth pastor down in Pasadena, Texas, I was in the church on a Tuesday night with the youth band, and we were practicing for youth worship on Wednesday night, and we're in there practicing when all of a sudden, an older couple walked in the back of the church. Now, this was Tom and Dorothy Curry. Everybody knew Tom and Dorothy because they both had lost their spouses like the year before. So they're a widow and a widower, and they had kind of started dating, hanging around each other, and everybody was kind of keeping their eye on Tom and Dorothy. It was kind of cute. They come walking in and motioned for me to come off the stage. So I stepped off the stage, told the guys, y'all keep practicing. And I walked up, and Tom says, Kendall, you know, Dorothy and I have been married before. I said, yes. Yeah. We both lost our spouses. I said, yes, I understand. Well, we're older and we know what we want in life. So, okay. We want to get married. I said, I think that's great. When do y'all plan on getting married? Tonight. I said, whoa, who's going to marry you? You are. I'm pretty sure you need a marriage license for that. I've got one. He pulled it out of his pocket. He said, would you marry us tonight? I thought, this is one for the books. Starla's not going to want to miss this. I said, hang on. I only lived 5 minutes from the church. I said, I got to go get Starla. Will you wait right here? Turn to the guys in the youth band. Joel, you could appreciate this. I said, can y'all, you know, do a rendition of the wedding song? Down, 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 a youth band style. So they played that. I went and got Starla. We came back. Tom and Dorothy walked down the aisle. I married Tom and Dorothy that night, and they got married and stayed married until they both passed away. Here's my point. You don't need a Kardashian style wedding to make a marriage last. You need a vow that will make a marriage last. That's what makes the difference. Now, I'm not against any style of wedding that you can actually afford. But you don't need all of that. Have you ever heard somebody say, and I'm gonna step on some toes right here for a second, but you need to hear this. Have you ever heard somebody say, we don't need a piece of paper to show that we love each other? Listen, that's just not God's plan. Here's why the person that says that only measures love in this way. They measure love in the way that as long as the feeling of romance is there, then they feel loved, like love is still there. But once that feeling of romance is gone, well, they say, you know, a piece of paper doesn't enhance that love. It doesn't add to it, doesn't take away. But the Bible measures love a little bit different. The Bible measures love not in how much you're able to receive, but in how much you're able to give, how much you're able to sacrifice for somebody else. And I'll tell you this, the true test of servanthood is how you respond when you're treated like one. So think about that the next time you get treated badly. The true test of servanthood, how you respond. So listen, the piece of paper, it represents a vow and a covenant that you make to each other and to God. Now think about this. In a traditional wedding ceremony, a couple will stand before a minister. A minister will ask a series of questions. Do you promise to love and honor and cherish? And they will answer. Well, they're not even talking to each other. They're answering questions because it's a picture of the couple not just covenanting with each other, but also with God. Because it's God who joins together. It's God who puts couples together. And then they turn to each other and they promise to be true to those vows. So when a couple gets married, they're covenanting with God. They turn to each other and say, yes, we're willing to do it. The piece of paper is a covenant that every couple makes with God and each other. So the person that says, I don't need a piece of paper, what that really means is that my love for you has not reached marriage level yet. That's what it means. In fact, from a father's perspective, if a dude came to me and said, hey, I just want to live with your daughter. I don't really want to marry her. I just want to live with her. What that sounds like to me, you just want to take her for a test drive. Is that what you're telling me? Yeah, that's not going to work here in my house. You know, I'd probably pull my gun out or send him on down the road. Here's what Matthew 19 says. Matthew 19, 3 says, some Pharisees came to him to test him. They ask, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female. And he said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife. We've seen that in three different passages now. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. So when a couple enters a covenant, God is the one that joins them together. So what happens when things get difficult? That's what the vow is for. Listen to me carefully. The vow is not a declaration of present love. The vow is a declaration of future love. Love for when things get tough. Because things are going to get tough. That's why we say in sickness and health, rich or for poor, whatever comes, good days, bad days, rain, sunshine, I'm in. I'm in for the long haul. That's what a vow is. That's why the marriage of mystery to many people is because they think that the key to marriage is just that romantic feeling that when it goes away, then I guess the marriage is in trouble. But listen, the romantic feeling is going to vacillate. That's just emotions. That's part of it. So what happens when that happens? What do you do when the romance seems to be challenged? That's when you become intentional now about the things that were natural then. Here's what I mean by that. When you first started dating, nobody had to tell you, y'all should spend more time together. You were together all the time. Every minute, every spare minute you were together. Nobody ever had to say, hey, you ought to call your boyfriend or girlfriend every now and then. No. You were on the phone all the time. Mom and dad were probably saying, would you get off the phone? You didn't have to be told, hey, y'all touch each other a little more. No, people around you were saying, hey, get a room. No, don't do that. Bad. That's just what they, that's, don't listen to what everybody says. There's just things that you did that were natural that you have to become more intentional about now, praising each other in front of other people. We just did that naturally. So the mystery of marriage is not a feeling. It's a covenant that we make before God and our family and our friends. Here's last, and I'm going to stop with this. Number three, marriage is a mystery because marriage is a picture of the gospel. The gospel is the good news of Jesus Christ. There's no institution on earth that will help you with your selfishness, your pride, your ego, your obsession with yourself more than marriage. Marriage will punch you in the face in a good way. It's intended to do that. People say to me, hey, I want an intense discipleship program. Great. You know what it's called? Marriage. Marriage, it'll straighten you up. It'll reveal all those things you've been hiding and you've been covering up. The fact is that we all have some kind of cover-ups, you know, where we hide certain things. And even in dating, think about this. We covered up certain things. In dating, we tried to cover up who we really were. And we were covered up by emotions and feelings. Like when you were dating, she would say, look at him. He's so passionate. He's so intense. He's so focused while he's watching that game. Look at that. Isn't that cute? 6 months into marriage, she'll be saying, I can't get him off the couch. All he does is watch that game. I wish he'd get up and take the garbage out every now and then. You know what he says in dating? He says, I just love the way she spares no expense to look good for me. Look at the way she dresses up. 6 months into marriage, he doesn't see what you're wearing. He's pulling out receipts saying, what, are you trying to bankrupt us? Look at all those clothes you're buying. You see, we try to cover things up. Dating covers things up and changes things. It's impossible to understand marriage without looking at the gospel, because marriage is a picture of the gospel. Jesus and his church, the bride of Christ. And the reason is because in our relationship with Jesus, we are to have no other gods before him. In marriage, you are to have no other relationship that takes priority and precedence over your marriage. Marriage should be number one. People get frustrated with marriage the same way they get frustrated with their relationship with Christ. Let me tell you why. A lot of people enter into their relationship with Christ, they get saved, and they think that now that I'm saved, I'll never have any more problems. Now that I'm saved, everything's gonna be great. Now that I'm saved, there always will be money. There always will be friends. There will always be peace. There'll be happiness, the joy. I'm gonna pick flowers in the field every day. It's just gonna be wonderful. You know what happens? You get saved and you get hit smack in the face with spiritual warfare. Why? Because the devil's not willing to give up on you and your family that easy. You start trying to serve God, and the devil starts fighting to get you back into his grasp. You know, why did all these problems start when I got saved? Because it's called spiritual warfare. Until you learn how to live in the victory and learn how to live above it. Same thing happens in marriage. People get married thinking that their spouse is going to complete them, thinking that my spouse is gonna be the answer to all my problems. And now that emptiness and that void that I had in my life, he or she is gonna fulfill all of that. And then we think, when that doesn't work, well, I just need a child. Then let's have a child. Now you bring a child into all this dysfunction, because your spouse is not the one who's supposed to meet that need. Jesus meets the need. In fact, marriage was never intended to make you happy. Marriage is intended to make you holy. Now, I do believe that you should be happy, because Ecclesiastes 9:9 says you should enjoy life with your wife. But that's a choice that you make. It doesn't just happen because you get married. It's a choice that you have to make. So let me just talk to the singles for a minute. Here's my word for you. Your marriage in the future is being built right now by the decisions that you make today. The decisions that you choose, the relationships that you choose, how you choose to interact right now. Your choice to remain pure and to remain committed until you say, I do. All of that is developing who you're going to be. The hookup, shack up culture that we live in today is not God's plan. And don't think that you're an exception. Men, I challenge you. You're not married, find a woman, court her, pursue her, win her heart, become the man of God who's worthy to be loved by that woman. Ladies, I would tell you, become the woman worthy to be pursued. Live in such a way that the man that is pursuing you understands and realizes that godliness is not an option. You've got to be godly in order to date me. That's what they should understand and know. God puts boundaries. I don't want to call them restrictions, but he puts boundaries on marriages and on our relationships to protect them, because they are sacred. Not to prevent us from having fun, but to protect them so they can be the best that God intends for them to be. Now, here's what I want to say. Many times we think that once we get married, our husband or our wife are going to be the one that's going to make me happy, make me fulfilled, and make me content. You're putting pressure on your marriage and pressure on your spouse that they cannot handle because it's not their job to make you happy. It's not their job to complete you. Oh, he completes me. You're in for a rude awakening. We're two fundamentally flawed people becoming one flesh. You know who completes us? Jesus does. So rather than putting pressure on your spouse to complete you, how about stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and both of you hold on to each other and encourage one another to move closer to Jesus, to become more like Jesus, because he's the one that completes you both. He's the one that makes you fulfilled and content in your life. Be your spouse's greatest cheerleader to become more like Jesus. And when you do that, then you'll find real happiness.